Past 8, the morning show with Greg Berg up next. Support for the morning show comes from Andrea's, a Kenosha tradition since 1911, a unique shopping experience time and time again, and that's what brings you back. And don't forget about Jack's Cafe, Andrea's, 2401 60th Street, online at andreasgifts.com. Support for the morning show also comes from the Carthage College Office of Continuing Studies, providing graduate and accelerated certification programs in education to start or advance a career in teaching. Convenient evening and summer courses are designed for the working adult. More information is available at carthage.edu/grad. And we welcome you to the Friday morning show on WGTDHD, your gateway to public radio. I'm Gregory Berg. We are towards the end of National Mental Illness Awareness Week, and I'm really glad that we can finish this week with a good friend to the morning show, Jack Rose, who is co-president of the Kenosha County chapter of NAMI, the National Alliance on Mental Illness. And Jack is here to talk about some of the current concerns that surround mental illness and about some of the really impressive things that NAMI is doing on both a local and national level to really make life better, not only for those who are themselves directly mentally ill, but everybody that's in their circuit, family, friends, those who care about them, who care for them. And it is impressive to see all the work that has been done. But of course, there is much that remains to be done to address this as properly as we can. Jack, we welcome you to the morning show. Good to have you here.
Good morning, Greg. Thank you very much.
Whoops. No, it's that one. Sorry. Yes.
Good morning, Greg.
Yeah.
Glad to be here.
Good.
It's
I'm
a neat opportunity.
Glad you're here as well. Ahead of us talking about some of what NAMI is really busy doing, remind our listeners why this issue is such an important one to you. There is something about your own life, family life, and so on that makes this a cause of really burning concern for you, and it has been for a long time, I know.
Yes, I sure will. My wife and I have two adult children who have been affected with mental illness, live with mental illness. And so in having the children, we wanted to go ahead and kind of pay back to NAMI, because when you first find out that one of your children is diagnosed with a mental illness, you don't know where to turn. Mm. And I think looking back, our daughter had some initial issues back in 1986. We had no idea what NAMI was. And so we worked through that, and we got out in pretty good shape. But when our son had a breakdown, and this was in 1999, we didn't really, I don't know, we were really at odds. He had initially been diagnosed with bipolar disorder. He was heavily over-medicated. We didn't really know what to do. So that brought us into NAMI. And I think the safety net that NAMI affords the parents is extremely important. And I think having gone through that, anytime you have your child diagnosed, I think the parents need as much help as the child. And so Sue and I have found ourselves in a position that now we are affording that same safety net to other people.
Hmm.
Take, for instance, we have a support session. We just had a support session last night. We had a young couple with a child, and this was their first meeting.
Hmm.
They were really reaching out. And so, you know, having gone through that, it's just, it's helpful.
Sure.
Lessen the journey, but...
Right. And you know exactly where they are. I mean, even if... I mean, not that every single case is exactly the same, but you have been where they were last night,
yes.
And that
yes.
makes all the difference in the world. I imagine that over the course of the years, you have sensed at least some change, albeit maybe not nearly enough, but some change in terms of our openness when it comes to mental illness, that once upon a time this was a source of great shame and embarrassment and the kind of fear that probably made it really difficult to reach out for help or to even to discuss such a thing openly.
Right.
I'm guessing at least that that you have seen at least some change for the better when it comes to that.
I think that's true to an extent. I think we continually fight the stigma associated with mental illness, and we need to do that. As you know, there is no cure, but there is recovery. But there comes a point when people are having difficulty. You know, you go back to just what it's laid out in our Inner Own Voice program. You start out and you have dark days, and you're right there. And then you come to the point of, or you try to come to the point of acceptance. And that's a key piece. And so then you can get into the treatment phase and the coping and the hopes and the dreams. But that acceptance is so key. And many times the acceptance is difficult because of the stigma.
Mm.
And so we have to continue to combat that. I think the generation of younger people today, I think, are much more open, much more, I would say, receptive of it. We were fortunate enough, we had an opportunity. We presented this pieces in My Own Voice, the youth version, to a 500 students at Ruther Auditorium. It was a combination from Ruther and Harborside. And it's just pretty amazing how some of these kids will stand up during the Q&A and say, yes, I have this. I know what you're talking about. So I think that's positive.
Wow. There are three basic missions of NAMI, and one of them is education, which is probably the piece that really speaks most directly to what we're talking about, namely this matter of stigma, the matter of misunderstanding of what mental illness is, of jumping to conclusions about it, and of being so fearful of anyone who is mentally ill that those people end up being robbed of any sense of community or and people don't often know what to do with their own concern.
Right.
And so I know NAMI has offered an impressive array of educational options and tools, and if anything, your efforts have broadened over the years. Let's talk about some of the programs that are part of this educational component, beginning with something called In Our Own Voice.
Yes, this is a program that we have people that are living with a mental illness, and they go through a certification process by instructors at the state level. It's a NAMI national program. So they get the training, and then they go out and they tell their story. And it's just the story I just related. You know, it's the it's the dark days, the acceptance, and the treatment, coping, and hopes and dreams. But it's somebody that's living with a mental illness. It's not myself talking about my children.
Right.
And so this right now, In Our Own Voice, is the biggest stigma buster we have. And in 2014, we had 23 sessions, 447 attendees. So far this year, we've had 19 and touched 812 people. And
wow.
So it gets out there. It's part of a pilot program that we took out to the high schools this year. And Lisa Zanin, our co-president, she's the coordinator of that and the real lead driving that train. And you go out and you talk to the students. And part of that is having one of our inner own voice speakers tell the students their story.
Right.
And again, this is... We have younger people, you right. know, that do this.
And this is, again, a first-person account, somebody with mental illness,
yes.
coping with it themselves, yes. talking about what it's like. And yes, I can see how the stigma just has to fall away when you are, in a sense, sitting right across the table from someone and
exactly.
hearing their story directly. What about this program called Family to Family, which I know you've talked about before?
Yes. Family to Family is a 12-week course, and it's for families and friends of people that are affected with mental illness. Generally, it started out as their children. Children get older, so we have, but it's for the families. And so it's a 12-week, very structured course. And through this, people become more aware of what mental illness is. They become more aware of what the different types of mental illness are. Mm. You talk about schizophrenia, and you talk about depression, and you talk about different anxiety disorders. And so with that, you are given kind of a toolkit of what you can do to help the person who is going through this and, you know, help in the communication piece of it. And it's getting the individuals comfortable with the class and telling their story. I mean, we've had people that come in that don't even want to sign in because of the stigma.
Wow.
And at the end of the 12 weeks, they have become some of our biggest advocates.
Wow.
And that's what you need. And so this past year, we had a neat opportunity. We've been giving it at the county, at the job center down in South Sheridan. And so this year, we're trying to expand out into the county. So we also had a class, same time, out at the county building on Highway 50 and 45.
Hmm.
So we had 22 people complete at the job center, and we had another 11 at the county building. So that was a good class, and we will continue to reach out. We also have three folks that are been trained and certified to provide this family to family in Spanish.
Ah.
And so we are reaching out to the Hispanic community, and we really need some help on that.
Yeah.
Because due to the culture, you're not just going to send an email out and get folks to come. You need a relationship built up. And so that's what we're trying to do.
Hmm.
And so we had an opportunity. We were going to give it at Wilson Elementary this year, but we did not get any people to come and take the course. So we'll continue that.
Sure.
But family to family, it's great.
Yeah, seems like a good program. I know the last time you were here, we spent quite a long time talking about this really exciting initiative called Crisis Intervention Training, which is an opportunity for people who, for instance, are in law enforcement or officers in a jail, certain teachers, can receive training on how best to proceed when you're in the midst of some kind of a crisis in which mental illness is an important contributing factor. Tell us what kind of exciting things have happened with this crisis intervention training.
Well, there are two basic courses. There's a crisis intervention team training, which is built on the Memphis model that goes back to Memphis, Tennessee in the late 80s. And that is a course to give the law enforcement a better toolkit, just like you said, to deal with people in crisis. It's a five-day course. We bring in... psychiatrist Dr. David Mays, who's probably one of the best in the state, and right at the front end, right at the get-go, gives the law enforcement a better idea what mental illness is. We get into drug and alcohol. We get into what the resources are in the community, both at Kenosha Human Development Services, what Kenosha County Human Services provides. We take the law enforcement officers out to kids, Kenosha Human Development Service. We take them to First Step. We take them to Bridges. And you show them just what's out there. Take them to Columbus House. And so it's just a valuable lesson. And then on the last day, they do role plays.
Hmm.
And here we bring in actors. We have different scenarios. And you put two officers in the scenario and see how they react. And that, in many cases, is some of the best training they get. We have, prior to that, we have a Dr. Eileen Abrams, who is the psychologist at Maximum Security Facility in Milwaukee, and she does the lead-in with communication skills, how you respond in a crisis situation. She also does a great piece about trauma in children, taking a child from birth going up to 20 years old, and just on the different environments, how that impacts the child's behavior, because they will start exhibiting behavior that's normal for them based on their environment, whether they're seeing people get shot, there are drug deals going on. It's just, it's a very dysfunctional, traumatic environment. And so then you can see why some kids may misbehave and may really have post-traumatic stress disorder, you know? So that's the CIT piece. The CIP is, that's a two-day course. It's a spin-off from it. It's more compressed, but that's for the ER staff, the social workers, the teachers, the dispatchers, the jail personnel. And this has been well received. I think we've got over 500 people that have been through that. And we have another class coming up November 16th and 17th right here at Gateway. And this is truly a collaborative effort between NAMI Kenosha, Kenosha Human Services, the county, the Kenosha Police Department, Kenosha Sheriff's Department, and Gateway. Gateway has been fantastic. We use T115 over in the technical building, and it's been very supportive. We provide lunch. Lunch is provided by Gateway, and also the classrooms are provided. Basically, NAMI has a contract with Gateway to provide the service, and all these services that I'm talking, all these programs are provided at no cost, whether it's the our community folks, whether it's the police department, it doesn't matter, but it's at no cost.
Wow. So something that is a relatively new effort from NAMI is something that I think for a lot of us on the outside looking in, it would never dawn on us that this was significant. And yet, as you described it, it makes all the sense in the world that in so many cases, somebody who is mentally ill might find themselves, for various reasons, really kind of sequestered in their own home, not out and about, not out in the fresh air, and not getting exercise. And of course, that can just exacerbate some of the issues that maybe they're facing in terms of their own mental illness. So NAMI Kenosha County has developed something called the Walkabout Rewards Program. And it is designed, of course, with the hope that that just by getting people out and about walking and exercising a bit, that that can make a big difference for their well-being. Explain to our listeners how this works.
This is a program started, I don't know, probably about 3 or 4 years ago. And people that are affected and live with a mental illness have a life expectancy that's 25 years shorter due to the comorbidity of having a mental illness.
Right.
And it's the side effects, and it's the different symptoms that come from that. They're more susceptible to different diseases. Diabetes. Many people have diabetes. It's a huge weight gain depending upon what the med is. And so we started, we said, well, the treatment for mental illness really encompasses the whole person. And part of that is exercise. And so even Dr. Mays says, you know, if you do 15 minutes a day of exercise, that can be very, very helpful for somebody that is living with depression. So what we did, it started originally with a caseworker and a support group. And they started walking. And the idea was to start at Bridges Community Center, and they were walking around downtown just to get some exercise. So this has grown to a point where they walk. It's probably, and they keep track. There's a coordinator, 30 days of walking. They get a certificate. Then they go out to Rogan's Shoe Store out at the I. Chuck Gustafson, the manager out there, very supportive of the program. And so Chuck fits people with the correct shoes to help them in this quest to improve their physical activity. And then NAMI Kenosha comes back and we pay for the shoes. And it's just been, it's been super. And now we've got 81 people that have been through it, and it's been quite effective.
Wow. Explain this program that also is going on with the YMCA, the wellness program. I assume that's a related sort of thing.
You bet it is. And it's a neat relationship that NAMI Kenosha has with the YMCA. And it originally started, again, small-scale pilot program with a caseworker from Kenosha Human Development Services that said, had some of his clients. And so he or she would take the clients out to the Y. NAMI bought a group membership, and the caseworker would have the people go around the stations. Maybe they went to the pool one day. Maybe they went, shot some hoops, you know, on the machines. And the Y has been very helpful because they show the people how to use it, okay? Mm. So this has expanded. It initially started in the community support program, which is part of KIDS, which is part of one of our recovery programs that we have. And so as a person goes through recovery, they become more independent. And they go from generally from community support program to comprehensive community services. And so in doing so, we thought, well, it's right on a bus line. So now individuals can go out and use the Y. Why not? Mm. If they need a bus token, we get bus tokens. But they can go out on an individual basis and exercise at their choice. And now with that, we've got over 171 participants.
Wow. So when people get to that point in their recovery where that kind of functioning is is possible, this is a way to encourage it and facilitate it.
Right.
And what a terrific idea.
And it really leads into that overall wellness, you know, and it's really helpful.
For those of you just joining us, we're talking today with Jack Rose, who is co-president of the Kenosha County chapter of NAMI, the National Alliance on Mental Illness. We're towards the end of National Mental Illness Awareness Week, which is why we are talking about all the good things that that NAMI does to try to make a difference. And before we're finished, we're going to, in a little more detail, tell you about NAMI's big fundraiser, which is happening over the next several days at a number of different locations around Walmart in Kenosha, Tanuta's Delicatessen, Richter's Marketplace out in Twin Lakes, places where you can make a donation to NAMI of Kenosha County. And we'll give you all those specifics a little bit later. Jack, of course, one of the other major components of the work of NAMI is directly supporting those who themselves are suffering from mental illness and those who are sort of the network around them, family, friends, and so on. Ahead of us talking about the kind of support that NAMI extends to people who are dealing with this, maybe you could just say a word about when you and your wife first were experiencing this firsthand, what it was like to experience it with not very much in the way of support. I mean, there was probably more support out there than you realized, and you just didn't know how to access it or what was possible. And, of course, came eventually to get some help and support. But it's probably important for you to say a word about how much more difficult it is to contend with anything, but especially something as scary as a child with mental illness, when you feel like, to a large extent, you're kind of doing it on your own.
Right. It's really a godsend. And I think with the level of the support now and the frequency, what it does, it shows the parents that they're not alone, that they're not taking this long journey by themselves. And you get support from that, and it's very strong, and it helps you, and it helps your psyche, and it just gives you hope, because many times you don't have the hope. And I think just not only that feeling of hope, but it provides resources to you in support. As you know, it is very difficult to navigate the mental health system. And I think by a local NAMI and one that is connected in the community, you know what some of these resources are. Some of the questions that we answered last night as far as, well, what's the next step? Where can we go for help? Where are some of the different residential areas? What's the deal with the insurance? And so you not only get hope by being in a group of people that are going through the same thing, but also you get a much better awareness of how to navigate the system and what is available out there, because that's so important.
So when somebody finds themselves in this situation, let's say parents find out that their child receives a diagnosis of mental illness, or maybe it's even an adult child or whatever, or someone's sibling or best friend. Yeah. So typically, do they just pick up the phone and call NAMI? And if they do, what happens at that point? I mean, typically, what does NAMI do when it responds to, let's call it, kind of a cry for help?
Right. We probably get, I bet, at least one call a day. And so what we can do with our different members in the community network, we can point these people in the right direction. Over the last week, we've had parents call with children, 17, 14 years old, 11 years old. And, you know, what services are available for these kids? Where should they go? And I think many times, 657-7188, Kenosha Human Development Services, and that is the entryway into the system. But I think sometimes it's, that number is not just the crisis call when somebody is contemplating suicide. That is the pipe, if you may, the inroads into a wide variety of services. So what we can do, what NAMI can do, is call that number and ask for so-and-so. Call that number and request a mental health assessment. Call that number and try to get into a psychiatrist. Call that number. So it's an entryway. And so if you call that number as people that aren't familiar with the system and you have a contact, who to call, that goes a long way. And then that's basically how we do it.
Sure. And you're painting a scenario that's even, in a sense, more helpful than the one I painted. I mean, the scenario I described was somebody who already knows, well, our son has this, and now let's try to figure out what help we can get. It sounds like NAMI also fields phone calls that sometimes come from parents where they're not even that far along.
Oh,
where
exactly.
Where they, let's say they have a child or a sibling or a spouse, and they suspect that there may be some kind of mental illness situation at play, but maybe have not even yet to the point of having really ascertained that for certain. And I suppose that's in some ways even a scarier place to be, where there is such uncertainty. And at least when you receive a diagnosis, at least you have something to sort of go on. But in that initial phase where maybe you don't even know that and don't even know, well, do I just go to my regular doctor, or how does one go about finding out what you need to know about what the problem is?
Right. And I think, too, it brings out a point. I'm sure you've heard that the shortage of psychiatrists. And we as a community are working through that. I think there is a study going on now with Department of Human Services where they're looking at Kenosha County and the access to mental health treatment. And this started, I don't know, a month ago. Sneka Santala and Dr. Greg Schmidt that's the team that's doing this. Very, very experienced in mental health and treatment. And so the stakeholders got together, and so now they are going out and they're seeing. And the big thing is to come up with solutions. And I think we all know what some of the problems are. You know, a lack of psychiatrists. and nurse practitioners. And I don't know how familiar the audience is, but if you have a psychiatrist and you have a nurse practitioner, you may not be able to get another psychiatrist, but get another nurse practitioner. Get a psychiatric nurse. And this can build a team that really can be underneath the psychiatrist. And this is so extremely, extremely important.
Right. So let's talk about some of the, and we've touched on it a bit already, but some of the tangible kinds of support which NAMI can extend to somebody with mental illness themselves or somebody with a loved one who's contending with mental illness. What are probably the most important ways in which support is extended to someone in that situation?
I think it's through the treatment. I think it's through the comment that just be there, whether it's a friend, a loved one, a child, but just try to be there with that person. I think through our support sessions, I think another very valuable course that's available is the family to family. I know it's 12 consecutive weeks. It's Tuesday night, probably run you 2.5-3 hours a night. But it's so important. And again, if you get a sense of being not alone, well, when you get a bigger group and you go through 12 weeks, and it's amazing how relationships can be built between families that are going through the same thing. And so I think that is key. That is key. And part of that, too, from this support, from this group, I think we get members of NAMI. That come forth. I mean, we have people that went through family to family. Now they're on the board of directors, and so it builds a community that is better. At the end of the day, we're trying to improve the quality of life for people that are affected with serious and persistent mental illness, and this is one of the ways to do it. Okay.
The third component of NAMI's overarching mission is that of advocacy. And of course, this is probably an effort which, in some respects, might seem kind of invisible to the general public. But it's probably as essential as anything else that you're doing. Explain what is the most important focus of your advocacy efforts at NAMI. Who are you aiming your advocacy efforts towards?
Well, I think it's a couple of things. I mean, I think if you look at it, and the county provides the resources for mental health and substance abuse. And so it's extremely important to make the county board aware, make the county executive aware of just where we're at with mental illness and what we need. I mean, Human Services does that. That's their role in a county. But, I mean, it's important to have an advocate from the people that are living with this to say, well, this is we don't have this. We need this. And it you need, I think, to build up a relationship with the county board, with the county exec. And so this is a continuing dialogue, and I think it's very important. And I think we continue to try to educate the county board about mental illness and mental health awareness. And so this is a key piece of advocacy. I think another one is being an advocate for a person with mental illness who finds themselves in extremis. I've spent 3 weeks ago, I was at the intake court in jail with somebody that had a mental illness, and you try to be an advocate for that person. A few years back, we had a juvenile that was in the legal system, and they were ready to incarcerate the adolescent. All right, we made a plea to the judge to go for treatment, and it worked out. But we can only do so many things, and again I say, if somebody needs help, they need to let us know, and that they need to call 262-605-9038. And it's extremely important because we do advocacy to get resources. We do advocacy many times for individuals who find themselves in a bad position. I think another thing that we are doing as advocates is that I sit on the Behavioral Health Treatment Court Committee. And this is a committee that's made up under Judge Kirkman. We have people from mental health, Kenosha County Mental Health. We have some of our providers. We have police representation. We have probation and parole representation and public defender. And so this is a group that meets with the judge, and we talk about the cases that are before it. Right now we probably have, I don't know, 13 clients in the Behavioral Health Treatment Court. We've already had like 4 graduates. I mean, this goes back to, I think we started in November of 2013, I believe. So it hasn't been in existence that long. But here is another opportunity. When you're sitting with the DA or the assistant DA and the public defender and the different resource people and the judge, you're there as an advocate. And it works. And it's a very complex situation with Behavioral Health Treatment Court. I mean, we have Drug and Alcohol Court, which is it's another real positive thing for our county with Judge Milosakis. And now we have the Behavioral Health Treatment Court. But many of these folks, they not only have a mental illness, but they also have an addiction. And so it's a difficult progress, difficult, but it's worthwhile, and we're getting there, okay? And so I think that's another point that's very positive about Kenosha County, because we've taken the steps to initiate this.
You have a couple of points during this interview talked about the mental illness system and helping people sort of navigate the system. And this might be a good time as any to kind of talk about what that system is and some of the realities that are really important to understand. And one part of that, of course, is the criminal justice system and how are the statutes of law set up in terms of mental illness, and does being mentally ill just give you a free pass to do whatever you want, or at what point does even someone with mental illness have to take responsibility for what they have done and maybe for a crime they've committed, and at what point does mental illness become something that becomes a factor in whether or not they are punished versus given treatment and so on. Let's start there. Do we have sufficient clarity in the law enforcement, criminal justice arena right now when it comes to dealing with people with mental illness? Or is that something that ends up kind of being left to the judgment of police officers and judges and so on in the moment? Does there need to be more clarity when it comes to this really complicated matter?
I think with respect to the DOC, the justice system, I think, yes, we need to continue to work with that. I think we need to provide assistance. But first, I should say, having a mental illness does not give you a green light to commit crime, period. You have a mental illness, you need to have that treated. And so many times, whether it's a lack of resources, whether it's the mindset of a district, of a county, that plays out in how they handle somebody that has a mental illness, is in crisis, and or commits a crime. And so it's a very complex thing, and I think the prison system, I think you look at the number of people that are with a mental illness, say in a jail, in a county jail, it's high. I mean, you could have 50%, maybe even higher. And it's sad because some of these, you know, you go back to the 70s, 80s when they said, okay, we're gonna shut down all the as they said at that time, the insane asylums. We're going to put the people on the street, And, oh, by the way, we're going to provide resources so that you can have community-based programs. Never happened. Never happened. And so
the last part didn't happen. The first part happened.
First did. Yeah. No. Yeah, they're out. They're shut down. But yet you need some beds. And you need some funding to provide the community support programs. So these are the things that we're continually struggling with.
And so in other words, the fallout from that move that was made decades ago is still being felt in 2015.
Yes, it is. And they say like the L.A. jail or the Miami-Dade County jail, that's the biggest mental health institute in the nation. I mean, it's really sad. But, you know, you're trying to deal with that. There was a story here recently where and it changes from state to state. And some of the state prisons may have, if they have the money, they may have better, more access to mental health care. They really may. There was a situation, I think it was in California, where parents tried to get help for their kid, couldn't get it. Kid finally commits a crime, a serious crime. So now he's in jail, and now he's getting to see a psychiatrist. He gets to see a psychologist. They're working on meds. But why? We got to get on the front end of this. And it's been kind of like a catch-all. Well, let's incarcerate him. And that is not the answer. That's why I think we have trying to do things here in Kenosha County. We have a mental health committee at the jail. We have people that are coming from Kenosha Community Health Center, which is a federal health center here. We have one on main shops on 22nd. They have a dental facility they built over on 63rd. And so we have a psychologist and another therapist that are putting in time with the jail staff. And we're taking the jail staff, and some are going through the CIT, some are going through the CIP. And so I think that is helping. There are support sessions now that are going on at the jail. I think Sheriff Beth has been very cooperative on this and the staff that he has there. But it's a work in progress. We need to continue to do it.
Sure.
We had an example of a prisoner that was in the federal system and has been moving around to different federal. And it was a situation where he had to come back into the area for a hearing in Milwaukee. He spent some time in the Kenosha County Jail. And compared to a federal mental health prison out east, one in Atlanta, he received the best treatment of all those right here in Kenosha County.
Wow.
So I think that's a huge plus for our jail. I mean, we need to continue to work on that. But I think we're open and we're trying to make it better. And I mean, you have a positive attitude, you can get stuff done.
Right. Real quick, what about the matter of insurance? We've talked about that before, and the fact that sometimes that's been a very vexing and frustrating problem that medical insurance will address, you know, things like your broken leg and your dislocated hip and your diabetes and whatever. But in the past, at least, so much in terms of health insurance has not particularly addressed mental illness or not very well. How much has that situation improved? What work remains to be done?
We need a lot of work to be done. We need a lot of work. If you look back, you mentioned parity. Yes, finally, the U.S. passed parity. Wisconsin passed parity. We're one of the last six states to finally get it. But you need to enforce it. You need to be able to execute that. I think with some of the with Obamacare and some of that's been provided, we have the Badger Care here in the state. So that is providing some help that's been needed. I think if you look at some of the legislation that's going on now, you have Senator Murphy and Congressman Murphy. You got two different bills going along now. We need to get this passed because there's a key piece in that is this dealing with Medicaid. It's the IMD exclusion. And what that means is that if you have a facility that is an IMD, an Institute for Mental Disease, Winnebago, Mendota, Aurora in Milwaukee. They have an IMD exclusion that means if a person is 22 to 64, they will not cover him with Medicaid.
Mm-hmm.
That's a law. That needs to be changed.
Wow.
I think another thing that's important is that the Medicaid reimbursement. Medicaid reimbursement has not changed since the 90s.
Mm.
So how do you expect somebody to open up a shop and run it if you can't even pay the bills? You
right.
know, because the Medicaid reimbursement. So these are some of the things that need to get done.
Is this something that NAMI actively works towards?
Yes. There's a gentleman, Andrew Sperling, who is the federal public policy. Got to know Andrew over the years, and he's with NAMI National. And this is a continuing thing that they are trying to push forward. And right now, you know, you look back, 2015, and you look back to something that President Kennedy tried to sign in before his assassination, and we're still wrestling with that. But right now we have a bipartisan approach that has a mental health bill in Congress and a mental health bill in the Senate. And we need to bring this to fruition.
Hmm.
We really need to do it. We've been talking about it long enough.
Hmm.
And so with that, we're finally going to cross some of these hurdles and to give the U.S. a better mental health system. Because so many times it takes a tragedy like we've had throughout this year.
Right, again and
people,
again.
And then all of a sudden everybody gets excited. We need to fix our mental health system now.
Hmm. One way that people can be a part of that effort, of course, is to support NAMI of Kenosha County. And NAMI volunteers are going to be receiving donations at a number of different locations. They're going to be this afternoon and tomorrow all day at Kenosha's Walmart, at Tanuta's Delicatessen this afternoon, and again all day tomorrow and Sunday over the noon hour as well. Richter's Marketplace out in Twin Lakes this afternoon and tomorrow. And also donations can be sent directly to NAMI Kenosha County, which is P.O. Box 631 Kenosha 53141. Jack, what is the phone number there, and is there also a website people can visit?
Yes. Oh, I'm glad you asked me that. We have a fantastic new website and it's namikenosha.org.
namikenosha.org.
Check it out.
Excellent.
And it's brand new. Chris Cohn, one of our volunteers, has just done a tremendous job. And so it's just, you know, as you know, we're an all-volunteer outfit, and the people that have stepped forward and helped us out really make us go.
That's great. And what's the phone number?
You can get it at 605-9038, or you can call 652-3606.
Jack Rose is the co-president of NAMI, the National Alliance on Mental Illness for Kenosha County. Jack, it's great to talk with you again, and thank you for all the hard work that you do on behalf of this incredibly important issue.
Thank you very much, Greg, and thank you, Kenosha, for all your support.
Monday on the morning show, you'll hear an interview about the upcoming 10th Annual Conference on Nonprofit Leadership, which is coming up at the University of Wisconsin-Parkside, an event which helps people to be more effective in their own nonprofits. And we will be hearing from a couple of the different organizers of that event, and we'll hear from the keynote speaker as well. The morning show airs every weekday morning between 8 and 9 o'clock. Support for the morning show comes from the Carthage College Office of Continuing Studies, providing graduate and accelerated certification programs in education to start or advance a career in teaching. Convenient evening and summer courses designed for the working adult. Information at carthage.edu/grad. Support also comes from Andrea's, a Kenosha tradition since 1911, a unique shopping experience time and time again, and that's what brings you back. And don't forget about Jack's Cafe, Andrea's, 24016 60th Street, online at andreasgifts.com. cloudy this morning, but sunshine by the afternoon, a high of 59 degrees. Clear and chilly tonight, overnight low of 42 degrees. Sunny tomorrow, Saturday, with a high of 66 degrees. We're approaching 9 o'clock, and you're listening to WG.